As always happens, a 5-minute break takes 15 minutes. So I think what I'd best do so that I don't finish too far past 10 o'clock is blast ahead with my last half hour, and then I'll stay till anybody's done talking, and people can stay or leave as they wish for a conversation period after this, and we can talk about both what I just presented and what's about to come. But I don't want to shortchange what's about to come, because it's really kind of what I'm most excited about, which is new data that looks at the question of whether religion is unbalanced, toxic, or whether it contributes to human flourishing. This was a debate in The Economist, the British magazine, not long back, over whether religion is a force for good, and we had arguments pro and con. The new atheist argument is clear. Faith is one of the world's great evils. Christopher Hitchens, religion is violent, irrational, intolerant, allied to racism and tribalism and bigotry, invested in ignorance, hostile to free inquiry, contemptuous of women, coercive toward children. Or Sam Harris puts it more simply, religion is two things, all religion. It's false and it's dangerous. It's toxic. I have no privileged information about the first claim, and I leave to philosophers and theologians to debate about that. As to whether religion is dangerous, well, that's an empirical question. And there's evidence on both sides. A recent issue of Psychological Bulletin, which is the major journal reviewing literature in psychology, was entitled, "Does Religious Belief Promote Pro-Sociality?" Such as altruism, for example, helpfulness. And this skeptical reviewer was answering no. So, is religion toxic, or does it contribute to human flourishing? This doesn't answer the question whether it's true or false. It's simply whether it's nothing more than an answer to the question that's posed. We have a lot of historical examples. On the one hand, we have the Crusades, the Inquisitions, the Ku Klux Klan, the gay-bashing religious right of today that gives religion a bad name. And the new atheists would love to cite them. But then religion's defenders respond by noting historically the contribution of the church to anti-apartheid and civil rights movements, to the founding of hospitals and the spread of medicine, the creation of universities, and all these good things that are part of the legacy of the church. Well, yes, say the atheists, but look what happened on 9/11, what religion fueled and enabled, and has continued to do so in the world today. But then, say religion's defenders, if you look at what atheistic totalitarian leaders such as Stalin and Mao did, exterminating tens of millions of people, atheism doesn't have a really great track record either. And so the extremes remind us that religion comes in varied forms with varied effects. We can agree on that. But the empirical question is, today in human existence, is religion more often, religious engagement more often associated with human flourishing or with human degradation? First, we have some data, correlational data to be sure, that associates faith with human flourishing. Faith is associated with happiness by various measures. By the way, here we have a couple of contrasting hypotheses. Sigmund Freud said religion is a sickness. It's an obsessional neurosis that leads people to live sexually repressed, uptight, and therefore unhappy lives. Christopher Hitchens agrees religion does not make its adherents happy. Richard Dawkins helped sponsor a bus promotion campaign in Britain with signs all over Britain. There's probably no God, now stop worrying and enjoy your life. You'll be happier without the God idea. And on the other hand, we have people like C.S. Lewis. Joy is the serious business of heaven. So who's right? Well, Gallup in the United States was for a time studying what Gallup called religion in America. And for that, it constructed a spirituality index and compared the happiness of people that were at the low extreme. These were people who didn't believe in God, never pray, never attend worship, versus those at the high end of spiritual commitment who do all those things and who were twice as likely to report themselves very happy. Gallup also, more recently, has been doing this daily survey of Americans. So here's data from 350,000 Americans showing the average number of daily positive and negative emotions by church attendance. So blue is the negative emotions, and as you can see, they're less likely to be reported by people who are attending weekly. And green are the positive emotions, and they're more likely to be reported by people who are attending worship regularly. Gallup also has constructed a composite well-being index that aggregates various measures of emotional and physical well-being and has 676,000 randomly sampled people, I just love saying these numbers, across a two-year period. And as you can see, very religious people, people who say religion is important and who attend worship regularly, were more likely to tended to score higher on this composite well-being index. And here's data from 350,000 Americans for whom Gallup reported that, and by the way, Gallup is a completely secular, non-religious organization, so they're just reporting the numbers. Very religious Americans are doing very well. They have higher overall well-being, they live healthier lives, they're less likely to have ever been diagnosed with depression. Okay, there's a correlation between religious engagement and human flourishing across individuals. That's, I think, a pretty well agreed upon fact. But is this because religious engagement causes happiness? Or does happiness drive people to happier people just engage religiously? I mean, we could look at it either way. One informative Australian-German team mine data from the German National Panel Study. It's a longitudinal study that has followed 12,000 Germans over 20 years. And they report that individuals who become more religious over time record thereafter long-term gains in life satisfaction, while those who become less religious then record long-term losses in life satisfaction. And that sequence suggests that religiosity is having some influence on quality of life. And that's their conclusion, too. Religious beliefs and activities can make a substantial difference to life satisfaction. That's happiness. What about health? First of all, we know, as you likely know, that there are certain social and psychological predictors of physical health. Negative emotions, for example, correlate with cardiovascular disease, diminished immune function, and heightened risk of premature death. By negative emotions, I mean such as anger and depression. While lack of social support also predicts increased risk of ill health and premature death. And so if it is the case that religious involvement is conducive to healthier behaviors in terms of less smoking, if it engages people in faith communities that entail social support, and if it's associated with happiness, as we just saw, and positive emotions, then might we expect collectively, those factors to lead to better health among actively religious people because of less immune suppression, fewer stress hormones, and thus greater longevity. Well, we now have a number of epidemiological studies which have tracked thousands of lives through years of time, and in fact, that's exactly what they found. Here's a study that shows, relative to the population, the relative risk of dying in different groups. And as you can see, if you don't smoke, you have a diminished risk of dying relative to a baseline of one. You have about a third less chance of dying in any year. If you exercise regularly, you're less likely to die in any given year than is the average person. And likewise, if you attend worship regularly, you're about the same as those who do regular aerobic exercise to be less likely to die in any given year. And we have other epidemiological studies that make the same point. And then we have data related to faith and altruism, helping behaviors. There's two worldviews that I think are kind of contrasting. One says that the universe has, as Richard Dawkins has written, no evil, no good, nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. The universe is meaningless. It's essentially what it is. And we have another idea, the religious idea, that says that all people are God's children, whom the Creator admonishes us to love with selfless compassion. That's what we at least hear preached, whether we practice it or not. And thus we see that expressed in the World Parliament of Religions in 1993, speaking for all religions. Every form of egoism should be rejected. We must treat others as we wish others to treat us. That's the golden rule. We consider humankind our family. We're all children of God in this together on this planet Earth. And evolutionary psychologists have actually, in opposition to the new atheists, said that religion is really a good thing because it fosters morality, social cohesion, and group survival, and that's why it exists. These are people who don't believe in God, but think that it's an adaptive social system. And in fact, we have data that actively religious people are, in fact, much less often to be juvenile delinquents, to abuse drugs and alcohol. And studies in Europe have found that actively religious Jews in Israel, Catholics and Protestants in the Netherlands, Catholics in Spain, the Orthodox in Greece, and so forth, are less hedonistic and self-oriented than are their less religious national counterparts. So at least there's a correlation between active religious engagement in various European countries and a kind of compassionate, selfless, at least, words from people's mouths. And this is, it seems, manifest in how people use their money and their time. Here's who gives charitable contributions. First, in the United States, in surveys done by Gallup for an organization that studies charitable giving. And as you can see, the percentage of income that's given away to all causes is dramatically higher amongst people who are religiously active than it is amongst people who are not religiously active. Likewise, in the United Kingdom, those who say religion is very important give away about 3 times as much money per person as do those who say religion is not very important. And when it comes to volunteerism, going back to the Gallup Spiritual Commitment Index, those who are highly spiritually committed are dramatically more likely to report working among the poor, the infirm, or the elderly in their community than are those who are highly uncommitted. Is this volunteering just church-focused? You know, people are doing this through their church. A Baylor University National Survey ascertained the percentage of people doing community volunteering outside their place of worship and found that weekly attenders were actively engaged as volunteers beyond the church even more than non-attenders. Robert Putnam, in his recent book, he's the Harvard public policy researcher with David Campbell, a sociologist at Notre Dame, notes that religious Americans are 3 times more likely to be involved in their community in various public ways, in volunteer ways, and that this link appears causal because non-attenders become more socially engaged in their communities after they begin religious attending. And in Europe, much the same thing is found. The European Value Surveys and the World Value Surveys of 117,000 people found that church attenders were dramatically more likely to volunteer, report volunteering, than people who never visit a church. And these data, this finding, was dramatically evident in data that I think will be new to you, which is the Gallup World Poll. This is really an amazing poll. It surveys basically all of humanity. People from some 150 countries representing like 98.6% of the human population. And they recently asked people, have you done any of the following in the last month? Have you donated to charity? This is the percentage who answered yes among those who were less religious and those who donated to charity. This is the percent among those who were highly religious. How did they define those terms? Highly religious people were those who, number one, answered yes when asked, is religion important in your daily life? And number two, reported having attended a religious service in the last week. The less religious is everybody else. It's a very simple, clean, operational definition of high versus low religiosity, and a very dramatic difference, and it's true in every corner of the world. Now you may wonder, is it because these people have more money that they donate to charity? And actually the opposite is the case. They have dramatically less money than the more highly religious, and yet they're giving more away. And thus, said the Gallup researchers, the data presented here offer compelling evidence of the role of religious dedication in helping to encourage supportive, community-oriented behaviors. They found much the same thing for volunteering. Have you volunteered time to an organization last month? This is the numbers for less and highly religious. And as you can see, again, a dramatic difference. Does religion contribute to pro-sociality? Well, worldwide, seems like the answer is a pretty clear yes, at least as reflected in these data, and they're not small differences either. And we have other experimental data that primes religious cognition, and the result is that in a number of studies, it enhances generosity. And thus, in one University of British Columbia's experiment that's been replicated in the United States and in Belgium, participants were first primed with religious cognitions by unscrambling sentences, which for some included spiritual words like spirit, divine, so forth, and for others did not. And then they were given a choice between how many dollar coins to keep for themselves versus give to somebody else. And what the researchers found is those primed with the God concepts were doubly generous than those who had not been religiously primed. And so whether it was, I don't know what it was, but somehow putting religion on people's minds led them to be more generous. Voltaire, a thoroughgoing skeptic, had the idea, I don't believe, but I want my attorney, my tailor, my servants, even my wife to believe in God so that I shall be robbed and cuckolded less often. Because even though I think God doesn't exist, I want people who around me who believe God does exist. So the bottom line so far in answer to the question, is religion toxic? Is it dangerous? Is it one of the world's great evils? As the new atheists have said, is it actually, in massive amounts of data, religious engagement predicts human happiness, it predicts health, and it predicts helping behavior. Okay, that all makes us feel pretty good. But there's a fact of life, and now the story gets more interesting. Because there are other data on what one sociologist attacking religion has called the virtues of godlessness. And this fact of life is that the least religious nations, in fact, I've generalized, the least religious places, including states in my own country, tend to be the healthiest and most successful. In general, I'm going to show you, I'm going to flash now, so fast it's almost like subliminal priming, a lot of data. But they're all making exactly the same simple point. So you don't have to absorb the individual points. It's the overall point. Namely, first of all, if we compare countries, or in my own country, various states, that are some are secular, some are more religious, the more religious the country or the state, the less human flourishing is occurring. The more bad things are happening. Okay, so first of all, another way to put it is this. If God were to, I tell people this back home. If God were to pluck you up from here and right now put you down in some other place to live out the rest of your life, and you want it to be a place where people live long, healthy lives, there's low crime, there's stable democracy, name any good thing you want. Pray to God it will be in a secular place, that it will be like in Vermont or Oregon in the United States rather than Alabama or Georgia, or that it will be in one of the Scandinavian countries rather than in Pakistan or more religious countries that we could name. But at the same time, when we look across individuals within places, we find that the most religious engaged individuals have the most flourishing lives. I call this the religious engagement paradox, because the relationship between religion and human flourishing, if you want to ask what the question, you get opposite answers depending on whether you compare places or compare individuals. Now it's a paradox, and we'll see if we can unravel it at the end, but now let me just restate the paradox. Religious engagement correlates negatively with well-being across places and positively across individuals. Okay, that's the big conclusion in advance. Now let's quickly look at some data. Irreligious places and religious individuals are doing great. Okay? Indeed, people in religious countries, in more religious countries or more religious states, they're less satisfied with their lives, they die sooner, they smoke more, they commit more crime, they have more teen births. You name anything bad, anything I've looked up that's bad, they've got more of it. Okay? First, for a recent article we had in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology, Ed Diener, one of his graduate students who did the statistical analysis, and I, who contributed a little bit of the writing, asked a kind of a cool question, and that is, we asked some cool questions, I think, but one is this: what percentage of people on the planet Earth say that religion is important in their daily life? The Gallup data gave us the first whole Earth study, representative samples of all humanity, adjusted for population size by different countries and so forth. Is religion important in your daily life? Yes or no? People of the planet Earth. Okay, you want to make a guess as to how many people answer yes? The answer is 68%. Two out of three human beings say religion is important in their daily life. Now, I realize we've got to be careful not to generalize. It's only one species on one tiny planet. It gives us no idea about other places in the universe. But hey, this is our neighborhood of the cosmos, and this is how it is. Now, Gallup also asked a second question. This is called the ladder of life question. Imagine a 10-step ladder where 0 is the worst life you can imagine and 10 is the best life you can imagine. Where is your life? On what rung is your life on that ladder today? Okay, now I'm going to show you data from 152 countries. And each of these blue dots is going to tell you the percentage of people who say that religion is important in that country and where that country is on this life satisfaction ladder. And there's the data across 152 countries, ranging from Denmark, the happiest place on Earth, where 20% of people say religion is very important, to Togo in West Africa, the most miserable place on Earth, where 80% of people say religion is very important. My own country is shown up there, and here's Norway, that dot right up there. Very high quality of life, 7.7, and 24% of people say religion is important in their daily life in the country of Norway. And you're looking at, by the way, a minus 0.52 correlation across 152 countries. Okay, the more religious the country, the less satisfied people are, the lower their self-rated quality of life. So pray to God you're in a secular place. By the way, though, this negative correlation we find disappears when we control for life circumstance. Because these countries, like Togo here, are not only highly religious countries, they're very poor countries. And as I mentioned earlier, low income is conducive to religiosity. So when we control for income and other objective life circumstances, we find that line actually shifts positively somewhat in the other direction. Moreover, when we compare individuals within countries, we get a very different picture. Did you experience a lot of enjoyment during a lot of the day yesterday? This is people in Uganda, and this is people in Ethiopia. And you can see that in both countries, those who say religion is important in their daily life experience more enjoyment. Ah, religiosity is positively correlated with well-being. Ed Diener notes that across nations, there's a negative correlation between national religiosity and life satisfaction. But when you control for income, that negative correlation disappears. But across individuals, within most countries, religious people have higher life satisfaction. And we get the same paradox when we look across American states. Here's Gallup's index of emotional well-being by people in the 50 American states. And so we see here on the right, states with high religious attendance, and these are the states with low religious attendance. They tend to have higher well-being than the more highly religious states. So you want strong emotional well-being? Well, pick somebody from a more secular state. And yet, look at the data across the nation as a whole. This is the percentage of very happy Americans among 52,000 randomly sampled over the last 40 years by church attendance. And wowie, people who attend church several times weekly are twice as likely to say they're very happy as those who never attend. Okay? Secular places and religious individuals are happier. Okay, that's the religious engagement paradox. Let's try it again. How about life expectancy? The more religious the state, the lower the life expectancy, and by a substantial margin. This is a really big correlation. And yet, when we look across individuals in epidemiological studies, the more religious individuals live longer. In fact, those who attend church more than weekly have a life expectancy difference in one study that followed 21,000 Americans over time that was about the same as the difference between smokers and non-smokers. It's a big correlation, okay? So highly religious states have low life expectancy, and highly religious individuals have long life expectancy. Okay, isn't this fun? I mean, this is to a social scientist. This is you start hyperventilating. I mean, this is so. Or how about smoking? I mean, I kept looking at data, and they all come out the same way. This is the correlation between smoking rate and the religiosity of the state. The more people attend church, the more likely the people in that state are to smoke. Mormon, Utah, by the way, is just a total outlier here. And it so happens, of course, that these highly religious states are where tobacco is grown in the United States, the states of the South. Okay, that's a modest positive correlation between state religiosity and state smoking rates. And we see this, by the way, in the fact that the states of the secular states of the West Coast, where I grew up, all have religious adherence rates below all of the states of the American South, which all have higher religious adherence rates, and they all have higher smoking rates than all the West Coast states. Okay? So religiosity is conducive to smoking at the state level. But now let's look across individuals. In the United States, the more religious individuals are, the less they smoke. And it's not a little relationship, it's dramatic. Highly religious states have high smoking rates, and highly religious individuals have low smoking rates. The religious engagement paradox. Crime rate. I think maybe I'm getting near the end here. Highly religious states have high crime rates, and yet, and again, we see this in that the highly religious states of the South all have higher crime rates than do the secular West Coast states. And yet, when we look across individuals in the United States, highly religious individuals have a dramatically lower, a fractional arrest rate compared to the least religiously engaged individuals. Highly religious states have high crime rates. Highly religious individuals have low crime rates, the religious engagement paradox. By the way, I'm going to present these data at a social psychology conference in February. And I'm going to, this next couple slides will mean a little more to them, but if you know something about American politics, you can see a parallel phenomenon in voting patterns. Are rich people more likely to vote Republican or Democrat? This is sort of like asking, are Christians more likely to be happier or less happy, okay? The answer depends, again, on how you aggregate the data. The poorest states are most likely to vote Republican, which is the conservative party. But the highest income individuals are most likely to vote Republican. So poor states and rich individuals vote Republican. Now, which of those two stories tells the real truth? My social scientist colleagues will all agree that this is the graph that tells the real truth. Rich people vote their interests. They vote for the Republican Party, which is known for favoring the rich, low taxes on high income, and so forth. And there's something else going on with the state aggregate data that explains that. They'll want to explain that away. And for the very same reason, I think the true story with the religious data is told at the level of the individual. That's where life is lived. That's where the rubber meets the road. And the reason why highly religious states and countries have less human flourishing. It has nothing to do with religion and everything to do with other things like income, education, and other quality of life predictors that ride along with religion. So We have a wealth and politics paradox, if you will. Poor states and rich individuals vote Republican. So, in conclusion, religion has had both perverse and beneficial associations with human well-being. Irreligious countries and states are flourishing. And if you're a new atheist and you want to argue against religion as being adaptive, then these are the data you want to seize. And you want to seize them before controlling for other confounded variables such as income and education. If you're a proponent of religion and you want to argue it actually is a good thing, whether it's true or false, then you want to look at the individual data, because across individuals, religiosity correlates with everything good and other things I haven't mentioned, such as marital stability, freedom from teen pregnancy, and such. Looking at such data, the evolutionary biologist and fellow atheist David Sloan Wilson has said that Dawkins' diatribe against religion, however well-intentioned, is deeply misinformed. It doesn't engage the real data. He, as an evolutionary psychologist, doesn't believe, but he thinks religion serves a positive evolutionary adaptive function. And he's not the only one who thinks that. Thus, there's a recent book, An Atheist Defends Religion, Why Humanity is Better Off with Religion Than Without It. I don't believe it, but I'm glad it's there for these various reasons. Let me just pause here and kind of, as a kind of conclusion for my presentation, invite you to just speculate a little bit with me.